Well, hello everyone and thank you for joining us. Today we are going to talk about the pervasive issue of hyperlipidemia, in particular hypercholesterolemia. And we'll do that with two guests. We'll do the pediatric version with Dr. Naharian Bell, and we'll do the adult version with Dr. Subramanian. So Jessica, Sharad, hello and welcome.
Well, thank you so much for having me.
Thank you.
For having us.
Welcome. So quickly, as a way of introduction, Jessica, you're a pediatrician. Half I ask you, half you volunteer to talk about hyperlipidemia in kids. Why is that something of interest / expertise to you?
We actually have been talking about it more as our pediatric group. It's one of the measures that we look at in 9 to 11 year olds, especially in their well child exams. And so something that we talk about regularly as a group. So when this was brought up, it was of interest to me because we're looking at that most every day.
And Sharad, you're a cardiologist. Do you focus in particular about hyperlipidemia?
Yeah, I train in advanced imaging, cardiac MRI and CT as part of my training. Mm-hmm. And I started the director of the advanced imaging here in Center Care Heart Center. However, 6-7 years ago, there was a lot of interest in treating patients who are primarily having hypercholesterolemia but cannot take statins. Mm-hmm. And there was a new pipeline of drugs which were in the market for a few years then, but very, very expensive and inaccessible. Mm-hmm. So we started a clinic primarily as a make to process and streamline patients to be on these special medications then. Okay. What we started as a organic vanity project then, mostly for operations and streamlining access, turned out to be a full-scale transformation into a prevention clinic. Mm-hmm. In the last 6 years, which went from just being me being in charge with a nurse to now be 2 to 3 nurses, 2 nurse practitioners, a dietitian, a genetic specialist. We now do comprehensive prevention check in lipid clinic, focusing not just patients who are having statin intolerance, but a comprehensive family risk assessment, a personal risk assessment, and it's been very, very transformative, just not for my own practice, but also the service we provide to our patients.
Fantastic. That's an interesting progression. So, Jessica, the first question that I had was, who and why should we screen a child? Because that leads into, you know, you want to know something if you're going to do something about it. And unless you have a genetic abnormality, which I presume there are cases of a ridiculous degree of hypercholesterolemia in childhood, adolescence, you wouldn't see consequences. I know, you know, the plaques do pile up and you start very early, but you can halt this in early adulthood even. So who do you screen and what do you do about it?
Right. And so the National Heart, Lung, and Blood Institute expert panel published kind of updated guidelines because with these children, you know, the primary source of dyslipidemia we see is obesity, but a lot of times then we do have patients that have high lipid levels or high cholesterol, and they are not or they're asymptomatic. Mm-hmm. So the recommendations, if they don't have any, so under age 2, we don't recommend any screening, kind of outside of, as you said, if there are genetic mm-hmm. or some other thing we're worried about, and then between ages 2 and 9. We have selective screening. So every well child exam, if they have risk factors, we ask about risk factors. So if the parent has known dyslipidemia, there's kidney disease, heart transplant, HIV, obesity, hypertension, those kinds of risk factors, then we will do a lipid panel for these patients. Mm-hmm. And then universally, the screening in ages 9 through 11 is strongly recommended, and it can be non-fasting. And mm-hmm. so nice, they can go right after the well visit between ages 9 and 11. And then between ages 17 and 21, then there's also universal screening is recommended. Those ages of kind of as they're going through adolescence and they're going through puberty, the ages 11 through, you know, up until 17, we don't do the screening unless there are kind of selective cases.
What's the age you said?
So the ages in between, so between 11 and 17, we don't do universal screening. So
Okay.
Yeah, that's our regular clinic.
So let's say you have a kid, a 10-year-old, that's a universal screening, correct?
Correct. Yep.
A 10-year-old with one of the parents had an MI at whatever, 40. And grandpa had an MI at 50. And I don't know what an abnormal, you tell me, LDL would be for a kid, but let's call it a 200, something like that, a grown up, not nice number. What would you do about it at 10 years old?
So, are you saying if their lipid screening was abnormal? So, yep. So they would do the universal screening, just like you said. It would be usually non-fasting. And so, if it was abnormal, we would repeat it fasting. We come back, we repeat it fasting, and then if that still was abnormal, we would, discuss lifestyle changes, diet modification, and movement, and all that. But with the sounds of the parent having that history, then we usually do then refer to cardiology.
Okay, so you, if there's going to be a management, they go to cardiology, pediatric
So we don't routinely start medication.
cardiology. Okay, so the last question for you on the, on this. Even for adults, you start looking at risk, pros and cons, etc., to start a statin, let's say. Would you say that it's a rarity that a 15-year-old ends up on a statin? And you would say, let's wait till you are in your 20s. It would have to be something obscenely abnormal, or do you see that quite often?
I don't see it quite often, that age on a statin. No, not in my clinic. But I would defer to the cardiologist too for more of those statistics. But yeah, routinely I don't see that.
So it's mostly a screening to catch them early and put them in the right track and
Yeah, kind of heighten that awareness. Like, okay, I need to be more aware of this. I need to be aware of what I'm putting in my body, what family's putting in their bodies, how we're moving our bodies, all of that.
Sharad, with that as an introduction, number one, I wonder if you could comment on that. But number two, I'll ask, is kind of a cynical question, but the question goes to, should everybody be on a statin after they're, let's say, 30 years old?
In fact, it's not a cynical question after that. In fact, that has been talked about. And as a public opinion or a public health policy, there is no overall benefits outweigh the risk of everybody being on prevention. The irony is there are patients who actually have to be on statin or not even be on statin. So letting it as universal is a stretch, number one. I would recommend universal screening when you want it. If you're going to start there, that is one of the issues. I have seen certain patients in my clinic, very young patients, who have been on statins since they are teenagers, just as a continuum for a discussion. And both of them ended up being having familial hypercholesterolemia. So they have, in you, as you said, in your case, it's a young family member with MI, LDL of 200. They usually get screened for FH. 20, 30 years ago, we did not have a consistent genetic testing available. We do have available, and there are alternatives to statin therapy for treating these patients who are diagnosed with familial chylomicronemia. And the other time I see young adults in the either in the like high school kids or early college kids is they get their cholesterol checked randomly because they are going to be on an acne treatment. And their cholesterol is high, and then they are referred to us because the person who tested it, they were not looking for an abnormality. And having found an abnormality, now they need somebody to manage it. And that's where we come in. It can be managed by primary care doctor. It's not unique to us, but given the longevity of these treatment and the newer drugs available, I think this is better handled by specialists than primary care doctor. Or an endocrinologist, anybody can do that. So we do that. I've seen at least few patients who are in their 30s now, and I've been on statin for more than 20 plus years because they were told to be on that. And at that time, they did not have any alternatives to statins.
So if I live outside the straightforward cases, let's say, do you think, because I find hypercholesterolemia similar to hypertension, right? If the targets move all the time, the patient, when do you start? When do you start? What do you start? What you don't start? You know, there are statins and there are statins. There's other drugs other than statins. Do you think by the time you get a patient, quite often you see that we are not doing things in a very, very to the latest cutting edge science on how we should treat hypercholesterolemia?
Yeah, 100%. And there have been studies said that you pretty much practice what you learned in the last year of training, and you never adapt in a big way. It's like the egg thing. They say egg is good, and next year they say egg is not good. It's just the same thing. However, that's where the patients, do not get the right education. So it's natural for them to be skeptical because they're getting differing views from different people. And they said, I was told my cholesterol was normal by my doctor, and you are telling me completely different. I hear that somebody's told me I don't need a statin. You are telling me a statin. And somebody said, my neighbor or friend had a statin problem. I'd never want to be on a statin. So there is a, my half the time is goes to winning the trust and educating the patient. You are almost like a personal coach for them. You are not just a prescribing a medication. You're trying to educate them so that they are more informed to make decisions when we come to that part of the discussion. So almost most of my time goes by what is the understanding of what it is. And patients are naturally scared of being on medication, led to lifelong medication. So I think to kind of comfort them is more important. And trust me, nobody wants to have a heart attack, but nobody wants to be a see a doctor either. So it's that disconnect I have to kind of trust issue I have to win. I think when I do that, then the clinical decision making becomes much, much easier because diseases don't read guidelines, patients don't read guidelines. My job is to help them make decisions.
Okay, so a couple of playing ping pong kind of thing. And please remember, both of you, I do infectious disease, so pardon my ignorance. Unfortunately, I'm the host, but and this goes also to the primary care people who might say, what a stupid question. But I know there are low potency statins. So my first ping pong question, like simvastatin versus atorvastatin or rosuvastatin, should we bother using simvastatin or just go for the higher potency ones?
So I compare this to iPhone. The iPhone 4 works same as iPhone 15. It all works the same. What is the purpose of it? So there are three caveats to clinical decision making. What is the starting cholesterol level? What is the risk profile of that patient, which will just tell you what is the goal LDL, and the delta between 1-3 will decide the choice of drug. All right? So that's the process. So where you start, how the risk profile of the patient is, and where you go. We can do with simvastatin. It has a little more drug interaction than other statins. It is works 16 hours half-life than the longer, like other one have a little more longer half-life. And it also has a higher, relatively higher risk of side effects than other statins. So that's the spectrum. Cost is not an issue. I will go with the latest one. I mean, it itself is more than 15 years old. Either atorvastatin or rosuvastatin. It is not the choice of statin you make is more relevant. It is mostly the target. So most statin lowers your cholesterol by anywhere between 25 to 40% at the highest potency. So it's like 80 milligrams of simvastatin is as good as like 40 milligrams of atorvastatin versus 20 milligrams of rosuvastatin, the same potency. Some of the patients also need combination of statin therapy, so the drug interaction increases side effects. That's why I avoid simvastatin in some patients.
So getting into the potency thing and getting to the question of how aggressive, Jessica, have you seen somebody in which the hyperlipidemia was so atrocious and the kid got obesity, horrendous family history? Have you seen a cardiovascular event?
I have not seen a cardiovascular event, but I'm sure that they do happen if that, all those things align. But I have not personally, no.
Yeah, because now, I mean, you're seeing kids 12-year-old with poorly controlled diabetes already. So probably by the time they are 18, if you push it enough, and you could see it. So one question that I had about this is statins stabilize cardiac plaques. So if you do a CAT scan in somebody, and you do multiple in somebody without a statin and then a statin, would the calcium score falsely go up and make you worry, but these are stable old plaques, or you don't see that?
So it does not, it truly goes up. The calcium, what you're talking is a pleiotropic effect of statin, where they stabilize the pro-inflammatory plaque, which is lipid-filled, into a low-risk plaque, which is more calcified. Which is, I tell patients, like if you have a big blister, it heals into a scar. It basically, what that's what statin does to the plaque. And I take calcium score as binary, whether you have plaque or no plaque. Okay, so if somebody has a plaque and we have intensified or started them on therapy, there is no incremental clinical decision making at this point to do another calcium score, unless the patient wants to know what they, I want to know how it is. I tell them that calcium score will increase. I've had patients who had calcium score done every 3 years, and their calcium score went from 300, 600, 700, and at 900, they referred to me, and I said, like, you don't need to do another calcium score. It is a binary number. There is incremental value in repeating the calcium score only if it is zero to start with. Other than that, if there's calcium, I do not repeat it. You're correct. It technically can and will increase your calcium score.
Okay, and I apologize for the nature of the ping pong on this, but Jessica, but when you mention the risk factors, what weight do they carry, personal versus family? Do you put more emphasis in one or another in pediatrics?
I think we kind of look at the whole picture. They answer questions at the beginning of their well visit, and so then really if they have any of those concerning factors, then we do say that they are a higher risk factor and do the screening. So it's very easy to do.
And there's something that is kind of an unseen effect, but maybe I'm being hysterical about it. To some kids, they might not care, and some parents might not care, but some kids could be, let's say, 13, right? We say 9 to 11, but let's say at 13, 14, and you mentioned high cholesterol, heart attack. It would kind of suck to hear about that when you're at that age, and boom, let me drop a problem in your head. Have you seen that in some kids? It's probably kind of like, a bummer, or kids don't care.
I think in how we approach it, so usually when I approach it, I don't approach it, with just starting off with that they're, a heart attack, but I think just kind of, doing the screening, approaching it so we can keep you healthy. What are some approaches that we can do to not, not have your body become unhealthy? And so as opposed to more of a scare tactic.
Yeah, I don't know how to speak to kids. I just that one slip. I'm horrible. So, Charlotte, I wanted to ask you, by the way, you're giving a presentation of this, so you'll speak about guidelines and all that, and the guidelines are fully available on this. But ballpark, in who do you tend to escalate beyond statins? How does the process work?
So I categorize all patients, all comers, everybody on this earth, into adults, into three categories. Patients who have risk factors or no risk factor without no evidence of plaque. Patients who have evidence of plaque or coronary artery disease or carotid artery stenosis, meaning they have the disease. And the third is the patient who has the events, MI, stroke, peripheral artery disease, multiple risk factors. So somebody do not have a disease or at risk, somebody has atherosclerosis, and somebody who has events. So everybody's LDL should be less than 100. All of who do not have events, who do not have disease. If you have evidence of coronary artery disease, or a carotid artery stenosis, or peripheral artery disease, your LDL should be less than 70. If you have multiple events, stroke, heart attack, MI at any point, and multiple risk factors, that means your events and the disease burden, they are called as very high risk. ASCVD, your LDL should be 55. So the more colder it is, the more layers you need it. So more down the pathway you go, more aggressive you are. Whether you reach this 55 or 70 number can be just with diet, just with one medication, or usually a multiple medication. So the newer drugs are patients who are not statin tolerant, or they're not in goal LDL despite being on the maximum tolerable dose. Those are two indications.
Okay. Well, we are going to have a full talk on this. I think it's a huge topic. I'll mention here that my brother at 49, we have hypercholesterolemia in the family, but everybody dies at 90 something for whatever reason. And my parents are in their 80s, smokers, but the cholesterol is horrible. But there they are, like nothing happened. But my brother had a he had a sudden death at 49. But he survived that, so he didn't die. So it was a misdiagnosis, I guess. He was getting CPR for 25 minutes and he woke up, and 36 hours later, he was discharged like nothing happened and complaining that he didn't want the statin He had a tiny plaque somewhere, but he didn't want the statin because it was going to affect his bodybuilding abilities. I'm like, you are a lunatic.
I think I always tell my patient that you know your body better than mine. Your concern, maybe it's valid or real, is actually a concern. So my job is to help you. So at the age of statin, you can say you have no other choice than being statin. In the year 2024, you have other reasonable or even better options which are more cost effective.
Yeah.
We will meet where the patient halfway. That's where it is.
Yeah. I told him he was an idiot, so imagine. different approaches. But he's a family member, so it's different. Well, thank you. Thank you both a lot. I would love to ask you a lot of questions, but that's what the presentation will be for. But this is a great teaser for the presentation. So thank you very much to both of you.
Thanks so much.
Thanks so much. I'm looking forward to the talk.
Thank you.